Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're kind of setting aside the really flashy stuff, you know, AI, blockchain, all that.
Yeah, no fusion energy today.
No, none of that. Instead, we're focusing on something, well, much more fundamental to how companies actually run day-to-day paperwork.
Specifically, one particular piece of paperwork. We're doing a deep dive into this seemingly a very humble object, the physical project file.
Right, the kind used in a huge multinational construction consultancy firm. We're talking big company
And
here.
it might sound, well, maybe a bit dry, but honestly, this thing is fascinating.
Yeah.
We're looking at how formal knowledge, the stuff written down, codified in these cardboard file dividers, actually gets its power.
So it's not just describing what
No,
happens.
not at all. It's actively shaping it. We're sort of exploring the material organization of knowledge through this one object.
Okay, so our mission then is to figure out why these mandatory tools stick around. Because let's be honest, everyone kind of knows they often don't really fit the actual messy work people do.
Exactly. And that immediately brings up this idea, you might think of Foucault here, that knowledge, especially when it's tied to power,
Like corporate power.
institutional power, it takes on the authority of truth. And crucially, it gets the power to make itself true. It's like the company is trying to will a certain reality into being using cardboard and paper.
Okay. So describe this artifact, this project file. What is it exactly?
Well, picture a set of standardized cardboard file dividers, with tabs. Each tab represents a standard area of planning, cost control, procurement, risk management, things like that.
And the idea is this guides project management across the entire company.
That's the goal. Best practice for over 10,000 employees worldwide. But, and this is the kicker, the sources we looked at show this huge paradox.
Go on.
On one hand, it's meant to be this super rigorous instrument of control, standardized, unchanging. But in reality, it's often wildly flexible, sometimes ignored, sometimes just, well, useless office clutter.
Right. So how do we make sense of that contradiction, that it's both things at once?
We need a toolkit. Some concepts to help us see it from different angles. We're borrowing three main ideas from science and technology studies, or STS.
Okay, what are they?
First, we'll look at it as an immutable mobile. Second is a boundary object. And third, a slightly less common one, the blank figure.
All right. Three lenses to view one cardboard file. Where do we start?
Let's begin with the view from the top. The corporate ideal, the organization is this perfectly rational machine.
Okay, section one. The project file as an immutable mobile. So this is Bruno Latour's idea, right?
That's right. Immutable mobiles, these are objects or even pieces of knowledge that have this almost like magical ability.
Magical how?
They can travel across space and time. That's the mobile part,
Right,
but
right.
stay. They don't change. That's the immutable part.
Okay. Give me an example. How does that work for our project file?
Okay, so imagine you're a senior exec in the London HQ. The concept means you should be able to trust that the cost control report form, when it's filled out in, say, Singapore, means the exact same thing, uses the same categories, represents the same data as one filled out in Houston. The information is standardized, comparable, ready to travel, and crucially, identical in format.
Like it's been translated into a universal corporate language.
Precisely. Latour talks about the printing press back in the day. It allowed astronomers like Tycho Brahe to gather observations from all over, print them, circulate them, and suddenly you could compare notes easily. It stabilized astronomical knowledge, standardized methods, made it universal in a sense.
So the project file aims for that kind of homogenization, making everything look the same.
Yes, and that homogenization serves a purpose: centralizing power. Immutable mobiles create what Latour called centers of calculation.
Centers of calculation.
Yeah, places or roles where certain people, like senior management, suddenly gain the ability to act at a distance. They can make decisions about things happening far away because the information coming back is reliable and standardized.
Okay, I think I get it. Like the historical example you mentioned.
Right, the sources mention Portuguese sailing ships in the 16th century. Those ships, with their maps, navigation tools, disciplined crews, they were essentially immutable mobiles.
How so?
They stabilized this complex network, materials, people, knowledge, allowing the Portuguese crown sitting back in Lisbon to project its power across thousands of miles into the Indian Ocean. The center didn't have to move.
Gotcha. So back to our consultancy firm. The project file lets executives in, say, London or New York, aggregate all this standardized data, financials, project progress from thousands of different projects all over the world.
And then they can make these big strategic decisions for the whole company based on that unified picture. It creates a landscape they can sort of read and, well, control from afar.
And where do we see this function most clearly?
The sources point to the corporate quality assurance audit, the QA audit. That's like the ultimate performance of the file as an immutable mobile.
Okay.
Because the audit translates everything. It takes all these unique, messy, individual construction projects and boils them down into generic, comparable indicators. Like, are we compliant here? What's the performance score there? It lets leadership think about the entire 10,000-person beast as kind of one single thing.
So it's a tool for standardization, especially for junior staff, making sure everyone speaks the proper project language, follows the proper steps, reinforces the hierarchy.
Totally. But here's a detail that really shows the mindset, the belief in this immutable ideal. It's not just digital forms on the internet.
No.
No. The company mandates that all project files must be printed out, filled in by hand, hard copy, and then filed manually.
Wait, really? In this day and age, a global firm?
Seems crazy, right?
Yeah.
But that physical act, that paper trail, it reinforces the whole regime of truth. It makes the rules tangible.
And makes people feel watched.
Yeah, increases peer monitoring, internalizes that sort of disciplinary power Foucault talked about. Mm. The expectation is perfect stability, perfect compliance. The file must be immutable.
Okay, so that paints a picture of a very controlled, top-down organization, like a well-oiled machine.
That's the corporate dream, yeah.
But if this file is so powerful, so standardized, so immutable, why doesn't it always work like that on the ground? We have that quote, right?
We do. Direct evidence of a breakdown. A junior engineer asked about this crucial project file. She says, I honestly haven't read it. Only looks at it very rarely.
So, boom. That perfect immutable machine hits a wall as soon as it meets actual daily work practice.
Exactly. Which leads us perfectly into our second concept, the one that tries to account for this local messiness and variation.
Okay, section two, the project file as a boundary object.
Right. This idea comes from Susan Lee Starr and James Griesmer. And a boundary object is sort of the opposite of an immutable mobile in some ways.
How so?
It's defined by its flexibility. It's robust enough to hold a common identity across different groups or sites. But it's also adaptable enough to meet local needs, local constraints.
Uh-huh.
Can mean slightly different things to different people, but still provide a shared reference point.
So it's less about enforcing sameness and more about bridging differences, like a translator.
Exactly like a translator. It helps different communities of practice, say, the structural engineers and the environmental scientists on a project, talk about the same thing,
right?
Project file, even if they use it differently or care about different parts of it.
Okay, I can see how the project file might work like that.
Definitely. The sources give a great example. A senior engineer working on small-scale road designs.
Yeah.
The official corporate forms for change control, you know, documenting any changes to the plan, were just too cumbersome, too time-consuming, too costly for his small, fast-moving projects. A real disjuncture.
So what did he do? Just ignore the process?
No, his team created their own version, a simplified checklist in Microsoft Excel. It captured the essential info they needed locally, but wasn't the official form.
Ah, so the idea of change control represented by that tab in the file was robust enough.
Right.
But the specific implementation was flexible enough to allow this local adaptation. That's a boundary object function.
That's it, perfectly. And the organization even seemed to recognize the need for this wiggle room. The sources mentioned they actually tried having really detailed role profiles once and abandoned them because they were far too specific for the huge variety of projects people work on. They needed some ambiguity built in.
Which suggests learning isn't just top down from the manual, it's local.
Absolutely. That junior engineer we mentioned, he learned the real system when his senior colleagues basically told him, look, this is how I do it. It's not standard.
Yeah.
Everybody does everything slightly different and does it their own way.
So the physical file, the cardboard tabs, acts as the common landmark, the boundary object, but the actual paths taken around it are all unique and learned locally.
Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
But hang on, is this flexibility always a good thing? Doesn't it sometimes just mean people aren't complying? Or the tool is failing?
That's the tension. There's a definite asymmetry here. From the director's viewpoint, the file is still primarily that check sheet for monitoring.
Yeah.
Are people ticking the boxes?
Right, the immutable mobile view again.
While locally, the practitioners often feel, well, kind of disconnected from that bigger picture. The file feels ambiguous, maybe even like a bureaucratic hoop to jump through.
And does it fail sometimes? Does the flexibility break down?
Oh, absolutely. There's a stark example in the environmental impact assessment, the EIA process. Most projects should fall into risk category B, which requires a fair bit of work.
Okay.
But practitioners, facing time and resource pressures, often just mark projects as Category C, exempt to avoid the whole lengthy process.
So the boundary object function fails because the local needs, like saving time, clash too strongly with the global standard.
Exactly. The tool breaks down when standardization demands resources that aren't there locally.
And this leads to a really interesting finding, doesn't it? Something that challenges the standard idea of a boundary object.
It does. Usually you'd expect a boundary object to have its strongest, clearest meaning locally, where people are actually using it, adapting it, making it work for them.
Makes sense.
But with this project file, it seems the opposite is true. The file seems to have stronger meaning globally in that QA audit, in the boardroom view.
And locally.
Locally, its relevance becomes more diffuse, more uncertain, more ambiguous. People aren't always sure what it means or why they're using certain parts of it.
That is weird. If the local teams don't find it that meaningful, why does it persist? Where does its power actually come from if it's not really immutable or always a useful local boundary object?
Which means we need our third lens.
Mm-mm.
Either the top-down control view nor the local adaptation view fully captures what's going on.
Okay, so section three. The project file as a blank figure. This sounds abstract.
It is a bit more abstract, yeah. This concept from Kevin Hetherington and Nick Lee takes us in a different direction. The first two concepts, immutable mobile and boundary object, fundamentally assume that the things being connected, the engineers, the forms, the managers, are basically compatible. They can form relationships.
Okay.
But what if they're not? Practitioners reported deep incompatibilities between their work and the file.
Like the file structure just doesn't match the job.
Exactly. Remember the engineer who said the file is just a generic set of tabs?
Yeah.
He pointed out, sure, maybe it works for a massive multi-year infrastructure project where roles change. But for his small, week-long project, the tab for project manager change is meaningless. He said, you are not going to change project manager in a week. The file structure is just incompatible with the project's reality.
So the file isn't just being flexibly interpreted. It's sometimes fundamentally mismatched. How does blank figure help here?
It shifts our focus away from the relationships, the networks, the interpretations.
Okay.
And asks us to look squarely at the object's autonomous, underdetermined material form. It's about the blankness itself.
The blank does. You mean the empty pages?
Partly, yes.
Yeah.
Let's use the analogy they provide. A blank domino piece.
Okay, a blank domino.
Think about it. A normal domino connects based on matching numbers, right?
Yep.
Six connects to six, three to three. It relies on homogeneity. But a blank domino, it can connect to anything. It's indifferent to whether the piece next to it is a 2 or a 5 or another blank. Its very blankness, its lack of specific features, allows the game to continue in new, unpredictable ways. It connects heterogeneity.
Huh. Like the number 0 in math. It represents nothing and absence, but it's crucial for the whole system to work.
Precisely. 0 is a perfect blank figure. Now apply that to the project file. Its power might come not from its detailed content, but from its functional blankness.
And that blankness is real, not just interpretation.
Yes, it's materially real. It's the absence registered by those empty, uncompleted pages, often sitting between the required divider tabs. It's the guidance notes or forms that are supposed to be on the internet, but are often missing or out of date.
Okay, so this functional blankness, this indifference, yeah. What does it do?
It allows the file to function in seemingly contradictory ways at the same time.
Hmm.
It can be indifferent to whether the organization needs homogeneity or heterogeneity at any given moment.
So it can perform both order and chaos.
Kind of, yeah. Think about it. It performs homogeneity perfectly during that QA audit. The generic tabs allow the auditors to impose a single standard, tick the boxes, make everything comparable. The blankness lets the standard flow through.
Right.
But simultaneously, that same material blankness, those generic tabs, those empty pages, allows for and actually helps circulate heterogeneity. It enables those local adapted practices, like the engineer's Excel checklist for change control, to exist within the official structure without formally breaking it.
Wow. So the blankness isn't a flaw. It's the feature that lets the file mediate between the global standard and the local reality, even when they're incompatible.
Exactly. The file doesn't just reflect different communities or impose a single rule. Its own internal differences, its very blankness, provide this ongoing reservoir of possibilities, as the source puts it. It helps maintain multiple organizational realities at once.
It's essential precisely because it's underdetermined and materially blank in crucial ways.
That's the argument. It allows incompatible things to coexist without the whole system collapsing.
Yeah.
It's kind of the perfect organizational technology for managing inherent ambiguity and contradiction.
Okay, let's try and wrap this up. We started with this humble cardboard file, maybe feeling frustrated by corporate tools that don't seem to fit. What have we learned?
Well, we've seen it's not just one thing, right? Through the corporate lens, it's an immutable mobile progress, a tool for control, standardization, a regime of truth. Through the local practice lens, it's a boundary object, a flexible translator, sometimes useful, sometimes bypassed, mediating between different groups.
And finally.
And through this third lens, it's a blank figure. Its power comes from its material indifference, its blankness, which allows it to be a source of both organizational order and dynamic change, managing incompatibilities.
So the big takeaway for, you know, anyone listening who deals with these kinds of tools.
I think the core insight is that when you encounter ambiguity or apparent contradictions in a mandatory organizational tool, it doesn't necessarily mean it's failing or badly designed.
Right.
Often that ambiguity, that blankness might be its primary function. It's what enables a complex, diverse organization to somehow hold together, operating at scale, while still allowing for essential local adaptations.
Yeah.
And even managing profound internal inconsistencies. You only really see that if you look closely at the object itself, its material form.
Which brings us to a final thought, maybe something for you, the listener, to chew on. If we define agency in an organization, you know, real change, something unexpected happening, a break from the norm.
Yeah.
How often do we assume that transformation comes from a brilliant new strategy or a dynamic new leader?
The usual suspects.
But what if sometimes the real engine of change or the thing that enables unexpected shifts isn't human intention alone, but the subtle material blankness or the inherent differences already lurking within the standardized, boring tools, forms, and files we use every single day?
So the next time you find yourself wrestling with some generic corporate template or file, maybe pause and consider what possibilities, what unforeseen pathways might actually be hiding in those blank spaces.
Something to think about. Until next time on The Deep Dive.